Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
It is time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today's movie is the first in a series celebrating people we have lost in 2023. The movie, Argo. Released in 2012 from director Ben Affleck, this movie is in celebration of the career of actor Alan Arkin, who passed away on June 29th of this year. Well, 2023, I guess technically would be last year. With me are Ken.
If he could act, he wouldn't be playing a Minotaur.
And Ted.
Argo, fuck yourself.
Most famous line in the movie. And I am Eric. If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit. And that's what we're talking today is Argo. Is this movie a real hit or a fake hit? I guess we'll be the judge on that one. Ken, give us a synopsis of Argo.
On November 4th, 1979, revolutionists stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran, taking 66 Americans hostage. Amid the chaos, six Americans manage to slip away and find refuge with the Canadian ambassador, knowing that it's just a matter of time before the refugees are found and likely executed. The U.S. government calls an extractor, Tony Mendez, to rescue them. Mendez's plan is to pose as a Hollywood producer, scouting locations in Iran, and train the refugees to act as his film crew.
Cool. All right. Particulars. Ted, what do you got?
Okay. Argo. This is directed by Ben Affleck. It was a screenplay by Chris Terrio. It's actually based off of two different novels. The first is The Master of Disguise by Antonio Mendez. The second
Not the Dana Carvey movie?
No, not to be. No. Yes, not Dana Carvey.
The second novel is The Great Escape, How the CIA used a fake sci-fi flick to rescue Americans from Tehran. Argo has a running time of 120 minutes. It had a release date of October 12, 2012. It had a budget of $44.5 million. It had a box office gross of $232.3 million. And it has a Rotten Tomatoes score, critics score, certified fresh 96%, and a positive audience score of 90%.
That's impressive.
Yes, it is. And Argo stars Ben Affleck as CIA agent Tony Mendez, Bryan Cranston as CIA deputy director Jack O'Donnell, Alan Arkin as Lester Siegel, John Goodman as John Chambers, Victor Garber as Ken Taylor, Tate Donovan as Rob Anders, Clea DuVall as Cora Lychak, Scoot McNary as Joe Stafford, Rory Cochran as Lee Schatz, Christopher Denham as Mark Lychak, Carrie Bechet as Kathy Stafford, Kyle Chandler as Chief of Staff Hamilton Jordan, Chris Messina as CIA Officer Malinow, Zeljika Ivanek as Robert Pender, Titus Welliver as John Bates, Keith Zarabachek as Adam Engel, Philip Baker Hall as CIA Director Stanfield Turner, and Bob Gunton as Secretary of State Cyrus Vance.
And of course, you can't talk about Argo without mentioning it was 2013 Best Picture at the Academy Awards.
It was Best Picture. It did win Best Picture.
And Alan Arkin nominated for Best Supporting Actor and had a few other nominations. So you can't really talk about Argo without mentioning that.
It's one of those weird things where Ben Affleck I don't even think he got nominated for Best Director.
He did not, and people felt that he was definitely snubbed. Huge crime that he was not nominated for director on that one.
It's very unusual for a Best Picture nominee to not have the director be nominated as for Best Director.
Unless you're Martin Scorsese. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Stanley Kubrick.
Or Stanley Kubrick, absolutely. So do you guys remember the first time you saw this one?
I saw this on video, or DVD, or Blu-ray. As a tradition, I watched as many of or all of the Best Picture nominees. So, yeah, it would have been right a long time for Oscar season and Golden Globe season.
Oh, so you saw The Artist for 2012?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. My condolences. All right. Ken, when was the first time you saw it?
This is the first time I saw it this past week.
That's right. I forgot about that. Ken had never seen this movie before. His virgin eyes and ears is the first time he saw Argo.
Virgin eyes.
That's
it wasn't
right.
For lack of me not telling him to.
That's true. For me, I saw this movie first run in the theater.
Awesome.
I really was looking forward to this movie coming out.
Special.
I am special. My mother tells me every day that I am very special.
Sure, bus.
I'm kind of jealous that you saw it in the movie theater because it's definitely worth plunking down the money to sit in the darkened theater.
One of my hobbies is U.S. history. And when it comes to U.S. history, my emphasis for U.S. history would be U.S. history between 1970 and 1980. So when it came to the hostage crisis, this fit right in there.
This is
so
wheelhouse.
I was real. Oh, right there. So I was really looking forward to this thing coming out. I heard about it probably a couple months prior. I mean, come on. Ben Affleck's directing it, and it's got a really good cast. One of the few movies that I have seen first run the theater, unlike you gentlemen. So
you would have really, really enjoyed a couple of my college history courses.
I'm sure, yeah.
Because there was a couple that really focused heavily on between 1970 and 1980. And then my mentor in college, when I was studying history, his doctoral thesis was on the Iran-Contra affair.
Oh, there you go, from 85, 86. Good times there.
Well, it all ties into the hostage situation.
Well, everything, it all flows. It all flows. Okay. That's a whole other podcast that we could talk about 20th century U.S. history. Ken, you're breaking this one into two parts. Tell us about part number one.
Part number one. On November 4th, 1979, Iranian revolutionist stormed the United States Embassy in retaliation for President Jimmy Carter's giving the Shah coup was supported by the Western powers asylum in the U.S. during the Iranian Revolution for cancer treatment. 66 of the embassy staff are taken as hostages, but 6 avoid capture and are sheltered in the home of Canadian Ambassador Ken Taylor. With the 6 escapees' situations kept secret, the U.S. State Department begins to explore options for getting them out of Iran. Agent Tony Mendez, a U.S. Central Intelligence Agency extractor specialist, is brought in as a consultant. He criticizes the proposals, but is at loss when asked for an alternative. While on the phone with his son, he is inspired by watching Battle of the Planet of the Apes and begins plans for creating a cover story for the escapees that they are Canadian filmmakers who are in Iran scouting exotic locations for a science fiction film. Mendez contacts John Chambers, a Hollywood makeup artist who had previously worked for the CIA. Chambers puts Mendez in touch with film producer Lester Siegel. Together, they set up a phony film production company, publicize their plans, and successfully establish the pretense of developing Argo, a science fantasy adventure in the style of Star Wars, though it felt more like Flash Gordon, to lend the cover story credibility. Meanwhile, the escapees grow restless. The revolutionaries reassemble embassy photographs shredded before the takeover and realize that some personnel are unaccounted for. And that's the end of part one.
So with this movie, the one thing we don't want to turn this thing into is a political science debate between us on the politics of the late 70s about this event. I know we've talked about this movie, and we all know that Ben Affleck and the writers and the directors and the screenwriters took some liberties, changed some facts to make this movie flow. And obviously, we could sit here and debate that all day. So I personally was wanting to really just focus on the actual events of the movie and kind of talk about that versus us going on that, you know, tangent.
That's my
about
whole argument
it.
Of well, this movie.
Yeah, well, but I would be the guilty one who would do that on this one. I'm just saying, I'm the one that'll go off in left field.
Too.
The storyboards on the opening set this movie up so beautifully.
They do a
it
really
was
good
perfect.
Job.
Perfect. Anyone who knows absolutely nothing about the Middle East or any of their politics, just watching those storyboards gives you the background you need into that opening scene.
It's, the only thing that I would have changed from the first storyboards was to, I would have reinforced the fact that Tehran was considered the Paris of the Middle East. Tehran at one point was what Dubai is now. Like, it was forward thinking. They were advanced.
I mean, westernized. It was westernized because of the Shah. Same with Beirut, Lebanon. You know, they, you know, it was very westernized.
Yeah, they
could have probably brought that up a little bit.
The Shah was just another puppet that we had put in place, just like we did all over South America.
Well, because of the oil reserves. We wanted Iranian oil. It makes perfect sense. We put a puppet government in there and we roll on.
It wasn't just us, right? It was also the British.
It was us.
British
petroleum. It was all us?
Yeah. It was mainly us. We were the ones that were mostly guilty.
But yeah,
you had British Petroleum, BP and stuff. But the event that set off this movie was the Shah fleeing and coming to the United States for cancer treatment. If he didn't come to the United States, they would not have taken over our embassy.
We would have never been the great Satan.
Correct. The fact that we took him in, that is what set this off. And it's very, very unique.
I love that they used that interview where he's, I can't remember if he's talking to Ted Koppel or who he's talking to, where he says, well, they didn't come to me and tell me that they were killing people.
That's
the biggest crock of shit. He's so full of it, it's coming out of his eyeballs.
Yes. The dictator, the Shah and his wife were guilty of atrocities, and they knew it.
They were monsters. They were
very much so.
They were the Middle Eastern Imelda Marcos and Ferdinand Marcos.
We're getting off on that tangent now. We're getting off of the tangent.
Yes, we are.
Let's move back into the movie.
Didn't he end up dying in Egypt?
Yeah. No, he died in the U.S.
Oh, he died in the U.S.
Yeah.
He died in the U.S.
We never kicked him out.
No, we never sent him back.
I'm not saying we kicked him out, but I thought he ended up in Egypt and died in Egypt. I thought
it's like the chief of... I don't remember,
to be honest with you now.
I thought there was a blurb at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but the fact that we took him in is what set this off.
Oh, yeah.
And getting back into the directorial styles of Ben Affleck. So the way this movie starts out, all this footage was all taken with 8mm cameras. None of this was actual footage. This is all fabricated by Affleck.
So this never happened ever?
Stop it. Don't deny it. No, but it looks like it's actual footage from 1979. But none of it is. And I was surprised in watching this movie and watching the extras, if you will, the amount of green screens that were added in this movie.
Hmm.
When it came to the embassy, there were so many green screens that were added to this movie. Hmm. And it was done so well that you could not tell. I thought this was all shot on location in Turkey, in the U.S., on all live sites. I did not know that a lot of it was green screen.
Yeah, if you're talking about what Ben Affleck was talking about in the extras, he's kind of he's actually extremely proud of
the fact that he should be.
I mean, I feel like we're in the late 70s, early 80s. Ben Affleck has done a great job of setting this up, and you feel like you're transported in time. Kudos to Ben Affleck, because I didn't think he had it in him. I'm not the biggest Ben Affleck fan, but for this particular movie, he sets a tone right off the bat, and he keeps it going throughout the whole movie. He knows how to pace this movie. And I think the beginning, what you guys are talking about here, I think he makes the right decisions to start us off. I find it interesting that they could have also probably indicated in the storyline that this kind of thing had already happened. They've had people break in before and take hostages, but it's like within 24 hours, everything gets settled.
Smaller group too. Yeah.
Right, smaller group.
It never escalated to the point that it escalated the day that everything went down.
He says at the beginning of the movie, that's a bigger crowd than they're used to, right?
Bigger crowd than usual out there. Yeah.
Tate Donovan's character says
Beyonce's
that.
Beyonce's here. That's why.
Right. Taylor Swift.
But it's almost like watching a time capsule. It really is. I watched some of the extras. I didn't watch the one where it said that it was green screen. I figured that they were on location somewhere in Turkey or...
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan somewhere. Although nowadays, even though that there are hostilities between the U.S. and Iran, I believe they probably would have granted somebody to shoot.
Possibly.
There's a lot of posturing that's going on, and it is what
it is. But it was filmed in Istanbul, and Turkey does border Iran, so you have a lot of that Persia... Yeah. Persia look. I mean, unless you're, you know, one of those people that gets pissed off when you're watching a movie that's supposed to be filmed in Chicago and it's filmed in Toronto. And you're right. Like, that's not Chicago.
I mean, the reason why these hostages were able to be rescued is because of a fake movie. No matter sometimes what the relationships are between governments, it's like when it comes to like Hollywood and film crews and things like that nature, always been a separate thing and still is. People would still come. It might be a little bit more difficult,
right,
but people want that extra money because they want people to be able to be in their films and generate, you know, economy and things of that nature. So yeah, they could still do that today.
When you bring that up, one of the lines that sticks out is when Affleck's going, or when Tony Mendez goes to the Minister of Culture.
Minister of Culture to get permission. Yeah.
Where he lays out to Affleck why he's giving him the permission.
Yeah.
He tells him, he goes, you do realize that in Tehran, all of the movie theaters were showing pornography. We're trying to change that image. That's why I like the use of the word revolutionary more than Islamic fundamentalist, because it turned into fundamentalism because of the Ayatollah. But a lot of these people were revolutionaries. They wanted to change for the good. As with any revolution, the message gets perverted.
Me and you, Ted, when we watched boxing recently, that was in Saudi Arabia. And how many times did they show us the guy who's in charge of the entertainment section?
Exactly.
You know, it's like they're pushing the fact that they want to be an entertainment destination, a place that people can go to as tourists. And I mean, that, and they said that during the movie too, is that, you know, this is, or maybe it was during the extras, but they wanted to be also a tourist place to go to.
Like Eric and I said, Tehran was a westernized city. I mean,
the Shah westernized that city in the 70s. I mean, it was a very, very westernized, culturized city.
Even before that, in the 50s, there were casinos. I mean, the casinos were run by the mob, but, you know, they were...
Same today.
Iran was a westernized country before the Shah took over.
Havana before Castro came in. Yeah, exactly. I mean, people would fly down to Havana for dinner.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was a hot spot.
It was run by a monster.
So when it comes to, just out of curiosity, when it comes to Saudi Arabia and you're watching that boxing, does Saudi Arabia allow like liquor sales and stuff on their prem? So it's like the soccer, the FIFA World Cup, same thing, right?
With FIFA, there was a period of time at night that I believe that they could serve alcohol. But they had to negotiate that but that was Qatar, so that wasn't Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is trying to become
Riyadh.
The new Riyadh, is trying to become the new Dubai.
Yeah, well.
And they will never be Dubai because they...
Don't get me started on that. That's a whole nother podcast. But yeah, so obviously Iran in this era is obviously very... Now, at the time, with the revolutionaries taking over, has turned back to his Islamic fundamentalist with Ayatollah Khomeini taking power. I thought one of the interesting things that I didn't really realize, I mean, when I saw the movie, I did, that obviously anyone flying in and out, once you hit Iranian airspace, you cannot have alcohol. You have to stop serving it, which I thought was kind of interesting. Now, for the end of the movie, interesting, but we'll get to that.
It serves as an interesting point there at the end.
Yes, yes.
I like what we see here, though, inside the embassy and people watching all this go down and the different levels of being freaked out people are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you have the six that are talking to each other about, hey, we need to leave. We also need to get these people out because they're concerned. Was the people that actually were trying to get visas to go to America.
They're as good as dead if they're caught.
Right. Oh, yeah. They're trying to get them out first and then they follow later. But you have different sections that are dealing it in different ways. And of course they have to shred things and they have to break visa tablets
The prints.
Yes. Yeah. And so you have all these different people reacting differently and you see the people that are applying for the visas. They're scared. They don't know what, you know, what to do because they're trapped in this room and there's nowhere for them to go. They have to rely on the people that are working in the embassy to get them to safety. It's a great way to set up the tension of this film.
It's completely tense. And to sit there and watch as they're trying to shred documents and get everything
burn
out.
Them, I mean, shred them, break them, right. Just destroy all classified information as you have all these people breaking, you know, windows, right. Breaking bars, coming in the vents.
What about Marine that tries to go outside to calm them
yeah.
down?
Well, I mean, because he said prior, that's yeah, what he did. He went out work. There and he calmed them down, right. Not knowing what the situation was. But you're, yeah, I mean... Yeah, I mean it's yeah. crazy.
But then seconds because, he's blindfolded. So
yeah, well, but yeah, no one had ever
changed.
Yeah, right. No one had ever read that had never happened before. The revolution had not happened, so no one. It's all new. No one knew what was going to happen. Cyrus Vance and all his people are like, oh, it's going to be over in 24 hours. You know, that's what they thought. They're like, oh, they're just it'll be over. It'll be done. They're not going to hold them for 444 days. I mean, it was crazy.
They thought that they weren't committed. To this and
total total sidebar here, there is a great documentary called 444 Days, narrated by our man William Shatner. Shameless Shit. Plug, that is incredible. Check it out.
Shatner gets him out.
We're all yeah, Shatner. That's right. Shatner gets him out. That's how it ends. The world. That's right. Leonard Nimoy yeah. and Shatner, and yes,
they just beam him out.
They just beat that. Yeah. Oh, you're, yeah. you ruined it. They just beam them out. That's right. It's only six yeah. of them, right? You can do it.
What? So. It's a fascinating moment where it things change. Where things changed, because before it was a bunch of people protesting, but when it became militant, is when things got dangerous for the people inside the embassy. Actually, it's when Ben Affleck meets the British. Agent in Istanbul.
Yeah.
Where they're like, the CIA didn't know. And Affleck's kind of like, well, we can't be perfect all the time. It's very nebulous about exactly how much they really knew.
They never thought that their embassy was going to be taken over. They thought maybe they try to overthrow the government directly in mm-hmm. Tehran, but they're not going to take over the U.S. embassy.
Well, and it didn't help. Even though the Ayatollah put the crackdown on everything going as far as everything happening in Iran, they've still got the news reports. And this was being talked about in America all the time and on the news. So the people in Iran would have known there was a faction of them that became very militant. And yes, there were a lot of them that were college students.
And those we're getting off on that tangent again.
I mean, they suffered getting too, off on though, that tangent. At the end of things.
Yes. The six in there decide to leave because they're in a detached building and they are able to leave the back door, walk onto the street, which I thought was very interesting that they're kind of walking on the street. And if you kind of look as they're walking out the back door of the building, you kind of notice that it doesn't even look like they're walking into Tehran. Like you alluded, it's a very westernized city. So it wasn't like, you know, everyone was walking around in, you know, burqas and, you know, they're all wearing kind of normal clothes for the era. So they're able to kind of blend in and the movie purposes, brave. Go to the Canadian ambassador's residence. I know it went a little differently here and there, but for the purpose of the movie, the Canadian ambassador lets them in, who is played by...
Victor Garber.
Victor Garber, of course. Thank you.
Very,
the Canadian
very
ambassador.
Good character actor.
Very good. Victor Garber playing the Canadian ambassador, I thought, did an incredible job.
He's good in everything that I've seen.
He really is. Victor Garber is a great, great character actor. And I thought the cast in this, the supporting cast in this thing was just, oh, man. I mean, just, you know, you have the tensity of the White House staff, and you have the tense moments of the people that are being kept at the Canadian ambassador's house. But then you have the kind of, I don't want to say laid back because it is a tense moment, but the laid back, almost comical background of the Hollywood side of this caper, the Hollywood caper, if you will. It was a good balance. It really was. Ben Affleck did a great job in picking these people, these characters, and
the casting director did amazing, as well as the makeup person who made these people look almost identical.
Identical, yeah. They look
isn't
really
that
well.
Crazy?
Yeah,
isn't that crazy?
It is uncanny.
It is. How close they look. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. They did a great job.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. I agree with you guys when it comes to the makeup and how they looked. As far as the acting goes, I felt like they weren't given much to do with their acting. I felt like it should have been more tensed if we're going for that. I mean, I know, Eric, you told us earlier, you know, we're not going on that tangent. The real thing is these six people didn't, they weren't in the same location before. In fact, I think it was three in one location, two in another location.
Yeah, they were spread out.
They were spread out. It's hard to recreate a tension situation when with six people if it didn't really happen that way, right?
So, but you can still have a hybrid of the tension of actually just being known that at any moment you could be taken right. out, dragged, shot, hung.
I think for the most part,
though, because they were hanging people from.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's real.
Oh, yeah. We saw that. We saw that at the end of the film. They show us a picture of a real life hanging and compared to.
Hanging from a crane. Yeah.
I get that. I'm just saying the actors here are more for the look than they are for their, in my opinion, their acting chops. I mean, they look the part, but really the one guy that plays the one that has to be the producer, the one that can speak. The different language.
It's Tate Donovan.
No, yeah, that he's the head. I believe it's Rory Cochrane.
Yeah, okay. Rory Cochrane. I believe you're right. For him, he's got more to do than everybody else. Really, if it wasn't for the look, you could probably plug and play the way that this movie is set up for them. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. really about Ben Affleck. And you can then also go with Jack O'Donnell and Alan Arkin and John Goodman. John Goodman, of course, steals the show. You know, anytime he's in a movie, for instance, but here he, you know, whenever he's on screen, you love the Alan Arkin, John Goodman dynamic here.
It brings the dynamic is incredible.
It is. It brings something to the table. It kind of takes the intensity and it allows us to like settle down and have a little laugh and just enjoy.
Exactly right.
Right. And they do awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that before. And that's why I'm saying great job on Ben Affleck's job here as a director, because he knew exactly when to bring those characters, because we needed at that time to get away from the intensity of the film.
They're looking out the windows in the ambassador's house and they watch a guy get shot in the town square.
What do you say? They're going door to door like Jehovah's Witnesses and pulling people out and shooting them.
Brian Cranston says that,
having American people's names in their book, just a name.
Oh, yeah. People who were cooperating, people who are translators.
Yeah.
The guy who's the actual translator, I believe, like he said, I believe it's Lychek, is played by Rory Cochrane. I mean, he would have been targeted immediately because he was a translator. It's insanity how everything breaks down. But Goodman and Arkin here they're amazing. I like the fact that they took the chance to pull the veil back a little bit to Hollywood connections to the CIA.
Yes,
and
yes.
The fact that a makeup specialist would have helped the CIA with extractions probably from Saigon or
all over South America, Central America.
Yeah, big time.
I loved it when Mendez is meeting with the group and they're going over their ideas of how to get these people out.
I love that as well.
Bikes because and teachers, and he's just blowing holes in all their theories.
You wouldn't want to play chess with Tony Mendez.
Right.
Because he is seven moves ahead of everybody else. He can see, that's why he's the extraction specialist, and it's why he was named one of the 25 greatest CIA agents of all time.
50th, I believe. 50 greatest. Yeah. So, still very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, the latest rankings that just came out, and I think
that's right. Right. CIA Weekly.
Right. His attention to the details that everybody else is panicking and trying to, and they not trying to miss, but they do miss, like the fact that
huge details.
The fact that he looks at the newspaper and that there's snow on the ground,
right?
Who's going to be farming?
Yeah, wheat. There's no wheat growing here, and the school closed what 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Right.
Why are teachers coming in there?
Exactly.
And the bikes. I love the bikes thing. Let's try.
But he didn't have anything though of his own.
But at least he was shooting holes in their shitty theories,
because that would have got everybody killed
easily.
Right.
But like they said earlier, and this is the best bad idea that we have, right?
That's a great phrase. Yes.
I love the line. It's perfect.
It's a great line because it's true. Yeah, there's no guarantee that would even work.
I want to talk about John Chambers real quick. This is what's interesting about him is the fact that he's not some ordinary makeup artist, right? He's actually a successful makeup artist. He actually created the ears for Spock for Star Trek, and he also does the makeup for Planet of the Apes franchise.
Yeah, John Chambers has an incredible relationship and reputation in Hollywood.
Right, and to use somebody of that stature to help you with this idea, I would love to learn more about John Chambers. He sounds like somebody that you could do a movie on just by himself. And I think that would be an awesome topic to do.
Well, and he was also able to be trusted. Tony comes to him because he knows, well, like they've used him before, but he's able to be trusted. He's not going to run and blabber. He's going to keep it close to the vest. Hollywood is, notorious for loose lips. Very fascinating individual. And it's a credit to Alan Arkin's character as well. Here's a movie producer. He doesn't have to say yes, but Goodman knows that if they come to him, and even if he doesn't do it, he's not going to sell the idea out to anybody else. He's going to keep it to himself. Because that's a huge risk, too. It's a testament to those two men. I'm sure there were probably, in the real story, there's probably more people involved. But they take Tony's idea, but then they fill in the holes where people could poke holes in their story. And that's why this ends up working, is because it comes off as real. Like, they have storyboards, and they have, everything that's needed to make everything appear real.
Chemistry between the two is simply amazing. And John Goodman, one of the things that he accidentally did with John Chambers' character, he had a limp. Well, John Goodman hurt himself before filming had started. And I guess the rumor was that, John Chambers had a similar limp. So they're like, way to go on the acting job there, John Goodman. But it's like, it was done by accident. John Goodman, when he smiles, all of a sudden you want to smile with him. He just has that charisma about him, wherever he's doing like Roxanne, or if he's doing a movie or anything. He's just the person that you want to be friends with. In this character, he's funny, but he's smart. He knows how things work. And I think when you put Alan Arkin in there, and they're both sarcastic in a certain way, right? And when Alan Arkin's in The Office right now, when they're trying to buy the movie rights, I think that's what they're doing in there. You know Warren Beatty? Yeah, I know Warren Beatty. I was in the urinal next to him. So.
The Golden Globes Award. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, I think Ben Affleck said that he had the same with Charlton Heston. He was at the Golden Globes and they were in the bathroom, and that's how he got to know Charlton Heston. I mean, he doesn't know Charlton Heston, but he used that line similar to his bump in with Charlton Heston. I thought that was kind of funny.
It's beautiful.
I don't know if I want to say Alan Arkin is Alan Arkinist here in this movie, but this role for him is almost tailor made for it.
I was going to say, this is almost a perfect role for him.
Mm-hmm. If you watch his career, and one of the reasons why we're doing this movie is to honor his legacy as he passed away in 2023, this character is kind of a summary of all the characters that he's played throughout the years. I think this was the perfect movie to pick for him, even though it's not a big role. He's had bigger roles. He's been the lead actor for other movies.
But he was nominated for an Oscar.
Right, but what I'm saying here is, but it wasn't his biggest role as far as like time on screen or anything like that. But I think if you would looked at his career and all the characters he played, and you were to like combine them into one character, this would be it.
I can go with that.
I like how they were, what they needed to do to make this look like that they were really making a fake film. Making sure that probably Variety had to put out something out there to let people know. They actually did the read section. Mm-hmm. And that's where, to me, it didn't look Star Wars. It reminded me of Flash Gordon. I mean, you had the one that looked like Ming. He was bald-headed. Mm-hmm. And to me, when I saw him, I'm like, this looks more like a Flash Gordon ripoff than it does a Star Wars ripoff.
Yeah, it looks like Star Wars meets Flash Gordon.
They had a
mashup type of a thing, yeah. It's interesting if the movie actually would have been made, what it would have looked like. It sounded like the script was kind of trash, though.
Anything that was kind of a ripoff of Star Wars at the time would probably have been trash. We've been hearing that there was a lot of movies that were actually submitted to the studio. Oh, yeah. And possibly Steven Spielberg had one of those movies was submitted to them. Who knows what that movie was? That could have been Indiana Jones. We just don't know. I think it's interesting how well they were able to pull it off, that even Hollywood and others really believed that they were an actual studio and they were actually getting real scripts. They took the offices of Columbia Pictures, I guess an old office of Columbia Pictures, and they used that as their main office, and they had staff.
It was Michael Douglas's old office. After they shut it down, they were still getting scripts from like Spielberg and everyone. Right. They had to put that illusion that is a real company, it is a real movie, it is a real set, it's real everything, because you have to put that illusion out worldwide because you don't want anyone to say, well, it's fake. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like John Goodman's character said, you know, these people who are the revolutionaries over there, they have people living here in America that are selling things on, you know,
on the street.
So, yeah. And they're going to know. And I like the fact that Tony Mendez never acts like he's the smartest man in the room. He knows where things need to be filled in as far as the details. And he goes to people who know and he listens to them and doesn't try to take control. Like, oh no, this, you know, this doesn't need to happen. He and Bryan Cranston worked together, Ben Affleck's character and Bryan Cranston's character worked together to try to get everybody else to understand that these details have to be done if this is going to be successful. Because, I mean, you have seven people's lives that are on the line.
Including here. His own.
If these seven people are caught, this is an international incident. Like, this takes the hostage crisis to a whole different level.
And sure.
It could cost even the hostages their lives.
Exactly. When things go bad, they go bad.
Exactly.
And, right. And that's interesting we say that because we just talked about them doing the read through with the script mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But while they're reading that script on the television, you know, they're flipping over to Iran and they have the hostages and they're bringing them down and it looks like they're going to execute.
Mock executions. Right. Very
mock
popular.
Execution. We don't know that. We don't know that they were doing a mock execution, like they weren't going to go and kill them. I thought they were about ready to kill these hostages.
They're trying to determine whether or not the hostages that they have are really people who work in the government or if they're CIA. You talk about flipping over. One of the things that they flip over to is Nightline on ABC with Ted Koppel. Nightline was a TV show that was invented because, you know, NBC had the Tonight Show that came on after the local news. Well, the hostage situation caused ABC to create a special TV show, Nightline.
Yeah, with Ted Koppel.
Yeah, which we knew throughout the 80s, which came on after the local news on ABC.
Right.
Up until it was, unfortunately, canceled. I mean,
you know, like Jim
That's why, yeah. That's why. That's
well,
why
all
Night
your
Line
other
existed.
Networks had Comedy Guys, and ABC exactly. had a hard news show.
Yeah, and they wanted to continue the coverage of the hostage situation.
Well, it made Ted Koppel's career too.
I think that's another reason why this movie works so well. While we're in a time capsule, is we see stuff like Nightline, and we see things that we are familiar with. You know, I'm 7 years old at the time this is all happening, but I know that there was something happening at 7 years old because it was all over the place. I, even mm-hmm. as a 7 year old, I didn't know exactly what was going on, but I knew there was something bad happening, right? You know, you see these newscasts and these black and white TV sets all over the place, and you're saying to yourself, that throws me back to another time. So here's another way that Ben Affleck is just putting us in another place.
And it's always refreshing to hear the voice of the conscience, the voice of America, Walter Cronkite, because you get to hear him a couple of times too.
And Tom Brokaw was doing doing the Today Show.
Yeah, they showed the Today Show.
And they did mention Peter Jennings too. Tony Mendez mentions Peter Jennings.
Yeah.
And like you're talking Tom Brokaw in the Today Show, and you just have that one like Today Show like logo in the background, and that's all you got really. So you're looking at that 1979, 1980. Production value, it's really not there.
It wasn't what it is today. Clearly
exactly.
not
oh,
the
God, no.
yeah.
Well, they actually did news.
Let's talk about part two of the movie. Ken?
Posing as a producer for Argo, Mendez enters Iran under the alias Kevin Harkins and meets with the six escapees. He provides them with Canadian passports and fake identities. Although afraid to trust Mendez's scheme, they reluctantly go along, knowing that he is risking his own life too. A scouting visit to a bazaar to maintain their cover story takes a bad turn when they are harassed by a hostile shopkeeper. But their Iranian culture contact hustles them away from the hostile crowd. Mendez is told the operation has been canceled in favor of a planned military rescue of the hostages. He pushes ahead anyway, forcing his boss, Deputy Director Jack O'Donnell, to hastily reobtain authorization for the mission and rebook their canceled tickets on a Swiss Air flight. Tensions rise at the airport where the escapees' new ticket reservations are confirmed only at the last minute, and the head guard's call to fake production company in Hollywood is answered only at the last second. The escapees board the plane, and at about the same time, the airport authorities are alerted to their ruse. They try to stop them, but the plane is able to take off. To protect the hostages remaining in Tehran from retaliation, all U.S. involvement in the rescue is suppressed, and full credit is given to the Canadian government and its ambassador, who shuts down the embassy and leaves Iran with his wife as the operation is underway. The ambassador's Iranian housekeeper, who had known about the Americans and lied to the revolutionaries to protect them, escapes to Iraq. Mendez is awarded the Intelligence Star, but due to the mission's classified nature, he receives the medal in secret and has to return it afterward. Mendez returns to his wife and son in Virginia. The film ends by explaining what happened. The hostages were freed after 444 days. Mendez and Chambers remained friends until Chambers' death in 2001. Bill Clinton returned Mendez's star in 1997 after the Canadian caper is declassified. As credits roll, President Jimmy Carter is heard commenting on the operation. The end.
Carter says you're a great American. American what? He didn't say.
That is something about this movie. The lines in this movie are really good.
I mean, these one-liners. Oh, yeah. The one-liners are great.
Yeah, very well. Well done. Just as an aside, I'd love to know and be able to go through that vault when they pack everything up and it's all classified and they put it in the bank box and the guy takes it away.
What's in there?
I'd just love to be able to go through those files, those boxes that are all hidden back there. It's kind of like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you're wondering what's in all those different boxes. The missions and things that are all hidden there. It's like, it's a historian's dream to be would be able to go through those files and see what's in there.
Like JFK, no. Man. It's like the JFK files.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is where the tensions really, really ramp up. It's kind of nebulous as far as how far up the flagpole this really went. And did Carter really know? Because they did authorize the Delta Force that turned into a complete and utter shit show.
Yeah, with the helicopters crashing, trying to free the hostages. Yeah, that did not go well at
that
all.
That was just a complete shit show.
No, Carter knew everything that was going on.
You think? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely.
At the end, he does, and he says, because he gives the okay for the...
No, he knows, because think about it. Like you said, if this thing goes bad, come on, it's going to go bad.
Oh, true. Very true.
He's got to know everything that's going on. Yeah, I know at the end he authorizes. They want to shut it down, and Mendez is like, nope, we're going. So make it work.
Yeah, but
there's no other way for this to
correct.
Go.
I know, Ken. It's a liberty. It's a liberty that was taken.
Because it didn't happen
liberty.
This way.
But that's okay.
It was canceled for 20 minutes.
But that's
you
okay.
You had to put it on hold for 20 minutes. That's
it's,
all.
It's a, it's a liberty that builds that tension. It builds that.
Right, but then
for the movie.
Even that 20 minutes is a huge, it's not insignificant.
Based on the movie, it's completely different because he's told the night before and he has to sleep on it and he's late to even showing up for them to go to the airport.
Because they think he's not going to show up.
And there was they never went to a bazaar. They never went to check locations and things of that nature. None of this stuff actually happened. And that's the problem what I have sometimes with movies taking liberties, especially something like this, because it paints people in a certain way. It, you know, does it paint President Carter of not knowing things when he should have known things? I think President Carter was put in a very weird situation because, of course, if he gives up the Shah, then he's going to look like a wuss. Then they know that whenever they take hostages, that they can, President Carter can then be manipulated to do anything, right? So he's in a no-win situation.
We should have never taken him in the first place.
Well, maybe that is the case. I tend to agree that that probably was the
Monday
case.
Monday morning quarterback.
But then again, in 1979, again, I'm 7 years old. I really probably don't have much of a say here. But this
little
cost,
Ken
this,
giving his political opinion.
This
at seven.
Probably cost Jimmy Carter the presidency.
Oh, it did.
It totally did.
It did.
Yeah.
It did because the hostages were released 440 days later on January 21st, 1981, the day that Reagan was inaugurated.
Right.
The moment he took the oath of office. Yes.
Right.
Inflation, the economy.
It's the midnight
surprise. This destroyed his presidency. There was no coming back.
You look at Jimmy Carter over the last 20, 25 years. He's now one of the most beloved presidents we've ever had because of his humanitarian side.
Right, because he's a decent human being.
Right.
He was too nice to be president, is what they said.
He was way too nice to be president.
I think that's why he was stuck in this no-win scenario.
Let's be 100%. A lot of this was decisions that were made in his administration that led to whatever all this that happened.
Sure.
These things had been brewing for a while. And because when the Shah left, I hate to use the word island hopping because he wasn't going to islands, but that's what he was doing. He was running from the Iranian authorities.
He was fleeing the country.
Yeah. We were the only ones that really made it public that said, yeah, you can come. And so, we're the great
safe. Well, it's for cancer treatments, too, but still, you're right.
And we're the bad guys to begin with. We're the ones that helped put him in power.
Not necessarily, but it's
I thought that's
the
what we said
in
the beginning of this podcast.
No, we are.
No.
When it comes to
the
Middle
great
East.
We're Satan. Because
when it comes to the Middle East, we are the bad guys regardless of what we do.
Because we put our fingers in all the pies.
And, especially then. I mean, more then than probably now.
Oh,
public governments,
definitely.
Assassinations, coup d'etats.
I mean, just look at
the glory days.
Look at the Canadian housekeeper. She ends up going to Iraq. I mean, holy shit.
That's not real either.
She went to Canada.
I think she was an Australian housekeeper, if memory serves me correctly.
It's interesting that they would have chosen to send her to Iraq when God knows we fucked that country up too. But
why would you have an Iranian or an Iranian housekeeper?
Well, they were,
and you're bringing in, any idiot can tell. Why are your house guests here so long?
Right.
Why do they always go underneath the floor every time someone knocks at the door?
And they make it sound like she was giving them information. That's how they played it out. And it looks like she didn't because at the end, she basically says they've been here only 2 days or whatever the case
may be. She covers for them.
She covers for
them. I like how they build that tension that you don't know if she's
going to sell them out.
For a movie, it works very well. And that's another thing why Eric says you got to separate the movie from the facts.
Got to separate it, man.
That's my problem is I watched the movie and I liked it. And then I watched, documentaries of what really happened. And I'm like,
and you're like, it's not
even close.
And I
watched it again
and
I start cringing. I'm like, no, that's not how it happened. There's other heroes of this story that we don't even get to hear about. We don't talk about the other locations where these people were staying at that could have gotten just as much in trouble as,
the individual that came over with Tony Mendez.
Right. Who was the one who actually grilled them on how to react to things, how to answer questions. It wasn't Ben Affleck's character that did that. It was the other guy that came with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of liberties that are taken, and you do have to separate your fact and your fiction and realize this is a very entertaining movie and look at it from a movie point of view.
They also have to condense it into 2 hours.
True.
Right. But the thing is here, they make Tony Mendez, who I think is a hero, don't get me wrong, but they make him out to be the biggest hero. Where
really,
it was kind of evened out on all the people that were supportive of this. And it's funny because when I'm reading this the second part of this movie, they had to keep it secret. And so they gave the credit to Canada. Canada was more the reason why this worked than our own CIA. Canada was a bigger part of it. In fact, they were pissed off when this movie came out. They added the additional verbiage about Canada and thinking Canada because of the fact that they kind of glossed over Canada's role in all of this.
Well, the Canadian ambassador was a hero, too. I mean,
he was a hero, but there were a lot of things that Canada needed to do, getting them the visas and the documentation. That was all done by Canada.
They had to sign off. Yeah,
that wasn't done by the CIA. They gave themselves a lot of credit in this movie, where more credit should have been given to the Canadian government. It doesn't change the entertainment value of the movie, at least.
It doesn't change the fact that all these people are heroes. Those six people probably saved the lives of those people that were in the building looking for visas to America. They probably saved their life.
Yeah, they could have just bailed at any moment.
Yeah, they could have just ran out the back door.
Again, not all six of them were in that area. It's a combination of different...
But they could have all bailed.
Yeah.
Yes. So like we tell our listeners, go out there and look at your... If you're interested, you know,
I mean,
look at the facts up.
It's interesting. Deeper. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
One of the six wasn't even in the building. He was in the next building over watching all this happen and went down. And he was the one that was in a different... In the Swedish embassy? I forget which embassy he went to.
Ken, you're really taking this personally.
When a movie's based on something...
Ken does not like based off of true story movies.
I have some problems with it. I do. I do have some problems with it.
Do you cringe when you see based on a true story? You're like, oh,
here we go. I'll go really quick. Cinderella Man. The guy who fights Braddock at the end, Max...
Oh, I forget his name.
It was a real boxer, but he's played off as being a villain. But in real life, he never did any of that thing. And so people who only watched the movie will think that this boxer was a complete asshole. Where in real life, he was a humanitarian. He was a very good guy. The film Argo, in the long run, the facts are good enough to support this film.
Now I want to rewatch Cinderella Man.
But don't pass this off to me as a almost biographical movie, which a lot of movies try to do. Even though they say based on a true story, they rely on the true story to sell tickets. Let's be
true. You can't take anything the Hollywood rolls out as biographical.
Right.
Like this
even
is
a lot
fact.
Of quote unquote biographical movies.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, look at Oliver Stone's Nixon,
JFK.
JFK.
Great movie. Has
Nixon's a villain, but he's not Anthony Hopkins' version of Nixon.
Mr. Burns is played by Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Dr. Evil.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Exactly. Nixon was a monster in a lot of different areas, but there's no redeeming qualities as far as Oliver Stone's movie goes.
Well, remember, Oliver Stone was in Vietnam in that era, too. So
exactly. Of course he hates Nixon.
Of course.
Or even like take the movie Hoffa.
That's Jack Nicholson, right?
Yeah, it's Jack Nicholson. Yeah. And here again, if we're going to go by Ken's state, you know, he talks about Cinderella Man. Danny DeVito's character in Hoffa never even existed.
Right. They do a lot of combining characters.
And you kind of have to. I mean, it is because ultimately it's a movie.
But it becomes a little disappointing when someone like Tony Mendez, when you really find out the true story, you're like, oh, Tony Mendez didn't do this and Tony Mendez didn't do that. I know there's certain things that have to be added on to create attention that is needed. But like, for instance, they never find out about them as far as when they escaped. There wasn't police trying to catch a plane taking off. None of that stuff ever happened.
I kind of figured.
I mean, right. You kind of figured that didn't
have
happen.
You have to kind of figure that. I mean, that it's tension building. It makes the movie more entertaining. When you're making a movie like this, I'm sure the script had to be approved not only by the governments that were involved. I mean,
Not by the Iran government. I know that for a fact.
Well, no. I mean, they're not going to go to them for that. But I thought that they were pretty fair in their depictions of the Iranians. The Iranians are never made out to be supervillains like they could have been.
Yeah, just need more backstory. Just kidding.
If you want the true story, watch the documentaries.
Right.
I mean, if you're watching a movie, you're watching a movie for the movie. And while the movie, it provides a good framework for what happened. Take the movie The Longest Day. My grandfather landed on Omaha Beach, or actually he landed on Utah Beach during D-Day. And he took my dad to see The Longest Day. He goes, this isn't how this happened. But it was all made for movies.
You know what gets me really the most is at the end of the movie, where they tell you what happened to certain characters. When they do that to me, it almost makes it seem like it was biographical. Hey, this is what happened to so-and-so. This is what happened to so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. Why are you telling me this unless you're telling me the true story?
Because there are facts. There are real facts that are involved here. So they can't be completely fake with everything, because then you're just making a fake movie. You know, that's kind of ironic because Argo was a fake movie. But to be there has to be that element of believability and truth when you're dealing with a real life situation. This is a massive debate that takes place every time that there's a historical based movie that comes out, is how much of the truth are you actually going to use? One of my biggest criticisms of the movie The Green Berets, it was nothing but propaganda. It didn't accurately depict the Vietnam War.
Oh, here we go. John Wayne, right?
I mean, it's a disgusting
movie. Here we go.
It's an absolute disgusting movie.
You have to get the disclaimer. He is not a John Wayne fan at all. So take it with a grain of salt. It
partially is because of The Green Berets. It was a movie that was written, produced by the American government to change the tenor of the mood towards the Vietnam War.
That's not the first time they've done that with World War II as well.
Of course not. Of course. They did it all the time.
I'm sure Studio 6 had a lot of propaganda movies when they were making them.
Right, exactly. Right. I'm not going to sit here and destroy a movie like Argo because it...
The main facts.
I'm not trying to
destroy
it.
The main facts. The shell is really what you need.
It's a good movie. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this movie. Does it disappoint me a little bit to learn things after the fact? Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing that I could say is there are some movies after I watched it, like Remember the Titans is another one. I enjoyed the movie, but then when I find out what really happened, it's kind of disappointing because you want those things to be true. Because you were entertained so well in the movie, you wish that all that happened, right? I mean, we just talked about
that. That's why we have the backlash over The Blind Side.
Exactly. I want to touch a little bit about the end here before we have to wrap it up, because we are going to recognize some actors that we lost in 2023. But so you had the slips, the white slip and the yellow slip. I was a little confused how they still got away with that, because I felt like the movie and the documentaries really don't tell me that the people that were processing it just overlooked it. I was confused a little bit on how that, because that was treated like such an important thing. And it was also like it just happened before he showed up to Iran, that system was just put in place, which I think is a lie too.
Right. It probably was just put in place. It's one of the security checks. But here's the thing. It also underscores the fact that bureaucracy still fails, even during a revolutionary period. The guy goes off into the back room, and it's probably chalked up that, you know, somebody made a mistake, and they probably threw the white slip away by accident, but they have this stamped letter from the Minister of Culture that mm-hmm. says that they were that's why they were there. Kind of take that as the okay, it was a legitimate mistake. So, you know, it is what it is at that point. It's the next checkpoint is where the problem arises, because those are the people who were the true militants. Those were the real hardcore revolutionary.
Those are the guys who'll shoot you on sight.
Right, like Tony Mendez said. These are the guys who were educated in America or educated in Europe that are full believers, and they are looking for people. Essentially, they're the secret police.
How ironic, too. I thought it was interesting that the third gatekeeper, if you will, screaming at them in Farsi, but yet he spoke fluent English.
Exactly, he did.
Exactly.
And it's just intimidation.
Correct.
It's nothing more than intimidation. He did not expect Lychek to speak Farsi.
Correct.
And because you can see the look on his face. It's a great acting job
by
that actor. He had completely taken aback when
it's my favorite scene.
Lychek starts.
It's my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Ben Affleck said he loved the guy. He said they call him? They call him the Brando of Iran or something. He gave him some kind of a name. They said he was an incredible actor.
Yeah,
he did a great job.
He was really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it one too many, though?
He's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it one too many twists and turns, though, at the end, though? I feel like they're doing a little too much. And I think I would have liked it if they would have ended it without the police change with the plane, if, because you had all those other things that were going on. I just felt that was kind of a little bit
they could have stopped too much. With them getting stopped at the gate that's the bars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't have to show them getting into the Zuzu truck or the Toyota truck and driving to the next
kind of like the South really, American gorilla look there.
Right. You're going to
see. What are you going to do? Pull the tires out on the Swiss Air jet as it's taken off?
On a 747, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no,
exactly.
That flight was delayed in real life. Yeah. That flight was delayed. Then other planes were taking off to go to other
they
locations.
They had two backup flights in reality.
They did.
British Airways and then one other.
But they let those go because they felt correct. Like if they would have jumped on those planes, it would have looked too suspicious.
It's true. And it turned out to only be true. Delayed
but
20
why,
minutes
why
instead
not
of 4
use
hours.
That? It is true and it sounds great. I mean, here you're being nervous. Know. Here's another flight that's gone. Here's another flight
it's,
that's
it's
gone.
It's Hollywood, man.
Because I know it's Hollywood. I just like I know. A little bit more realism in my film.
Because
but I,
now, cause yeah. now you do all that. Okay, we got to put this in. You got to put this in. Now you're at 3 hours and a half, you know. At some point, I mean, I bet you there are some great scenes on the cutting room floor that,
I'm
were
sure
filmed.
There is. Right. And I'm sure there would have been more factual stuff. And like I said, in most of these movies, they usually combine characters and scenarios together to save time and try to accomplish the same thing. And sometimes it works extremely well. And sometimes it's just like, okay.
One of the things that I'm grateful for is that this movie never goes to the lowest common denominator, because the lowest common denominator here would have been to have somebody portray the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
The only time you see him is in the actual news footage from what's his face from 60 Minutes.
Or could have got the guy from Naked Gun.
I don't know if
his hair, mohawk, and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if those were real posters, but those posters are creepily accurate.
Which posters? At the airport?
At the airport.
All over.
No, those are all manufactured.
Those penetrating eyes that he had.
Yeah. So the airport was LA International.
Another actor could never have accomplished those eyes.
No.
And it would have been farce at that point.
You didn't have anyone portraying Khomeini and, you know, or
because
anything.
Because there is such a desire to try to, you know, pull that something like that off. And there's no way you could have an actor pull off those eyes.
The other thing, too, with the Islamic community, if you are portraying like a Khomeini type of character, they might take offense to that, which creates a little bit more of an upheaval. Yeah, why that didn't happen in The Naked Gun, I don't know. But
no, it probably did.
Ken, let's talk about the reviews here. So we're doing something a little different here on our reviews. In the past, we would do our letter grade. But now what we're going to do is we are going to align ourselves. Each one of us is going to kind of look at a review from a major publication or a major reviewer and see how that mirrors our review. Kind of go over that, read it, and then we will give it a hook. That's our new thing now. It's our new hook. It's actual hooks. 0 hooks to 5 hooks. 0 being bad, 5 being one of your greatest movies of all time. So, Ken, why don't you kick off our new review style here?
Okay, so I'm going in with a reviewer by the name of James Crute. I got this off of Rotten Tomatoes. He writes for stuff.co.nz, so not a well-known critic, but I like what he had to say. And this is his quick stance on this. Students of history will find plenty to carp about, which does slightly spoil the overall effect. But as a searing slice of entertainment, Argo is hard to fault. I really relate with this, as you guys heard throughout the podcast. As far as a hook grade, I'm going to give this, it would have been probably 4 hooks, but because of some of the liberties taken, I'm going to downgrade it a little bit to 3.5 hooks.
How dare you? No, I'm just kidding. All right, Ted, you're up.
My reviewer is Peter Travers from Rolling Stone for this movie.
Big hitter.
He says Ben Affleck doesn't merely direct Argo, he directs the hell out of it, nailing the quickening pace, the wayward humor, and the nerve-frying suspense. There's no doubt he's crafted one of the best movies of the year. I couldn't agree with this more. It's a criminal matter that Affleck was not nominated for Best Director or didn't win Best Director here. This movie it's just an amazing feat of movie making. I mean, the fact that you can't even tell that they've brought in green screens. It's a great movie. It's a great story. It's a hell of a way to spend 2 hours. It doesn't even feel like 2 hours. And I think that's a big testament to any movie where you, when you sit down and you feel like, you know, oh, it's over already. It's definitely well worth anybody's time, especially if you're interested in any sort of historical movie. I thoroughly enjoy the movie. I absolutely love it. I can't really find anything wrong with it. I'm giving it 5 hooks. So it's a Best Picture winner. It's well deserving of that honor. And that's hard to be said for the Academy sometimes, but
I'll be honest, I didn't see that coming, but I would agree with you. Peter Travers' review is like spot on. Hell, I would have taken it if I would have seen it before you. I agree with everything Travers says, but I'm going to go with our good friend Rex Reed, who I guess now is with The Observer. Rex Reed, of course, has been around for decades reviewing movies, but his review is Argo is a triumph. It has tension, sincerity, mystery, artistic responsibility, entertainment value, technical expertise, a narrative arc, and a thrilling respect for the tradition of how to tell a story with minimum frills and maximum impact. I agree with everything Ted said, so I'm not going to drag this one out, but I'd give it probably a 4.5 star just because my hook. My 5 hook is going to be for, like, you know, top tier, leave me on a desert island with a movie. But this one might, if it floated in, I might actually keep it. It's definitely a 4.5. It's well done. I'm overlooking all the liberties, and there are a great deal of liberties taken in this movie. But overall, the directing by Ben Affleck is incredible. I think the cast is incredible, supporting cast.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, me being a history nut, that just helps out. But, you know, 2 hours is perfect. It flows. It's a great movie. I think we all say that we recommend this one.
Yeah, so. It's a good movie, despite Ben Affleck's acting performance.
But we all say that he directed it well.
I didn't say much about his acting performance. I know.
That's true. He said he was pretty
good here.
Would you say he was a little...
Ben Affleck is the same in every movie. He doesn't have any highs or lows. He kind of just
disagree.
He kind of plays it like Ben Affleck. So
the Tom Cruise theory at play.
Disagree with you big time.
I disagree with you, Ken, but I see where you're coming from. I do see where you're coming from.
Talking about his Batman performance, now that's bad.
I was waiting for him to go into his Batman performance here. He didn't go that far, but I was waiting for it. So it's
like, he's really come a long way.
Yeah.
He's really come a long way as an actor. He really has.
Well, I think he's a much better director based on what I'm seeing here. So I would rather him be behind the camera.
Gone Baby Gone was a hell of a movie. If you haven't
seen it. I will say I enjoyed him much more as far as the acting wise in Gone Baby, sorry. Let's move on. Let's talk about who we lost. I'm not going to go through the whole list. We're going to do some more movies for the next few episodes and in remembrance of those we lost in 2023. And I'll name a few of those. The next movie we're going to do is Fiddler on the Roof. Ted, who's the main star of that we're going to be focusing on?
The man who not only played the role brilliantly on Broadway, but also in the movie, his name was Topol. He played Tevye all the way up until he died.
Wow.
So he's typecast is what you were saying.
Yeah, when you've become as successful as... It's kind of like Rex Harrison played the lead in My Fair Lady up until the end of his life as well. Yeah, he was a wonderful actor. He is Tevye.
Fiddler on the Roof is going to be our next movie. Ken, right. who do we lose in 2023?
A couple of movies that we're going to do after that. We're going to... Matthew Perry is better known as a television actor for his TV role in Friends, but he also did The Whole Nine Yards, which is a movie we're going to look at. We're also going to look at Paul Rubens, who is also famously better known as for his kids' TV show and doing some things in a movie house. But we're going to look at Pee-wee's Big Adventure as well. But some other ones that we lost Ryan O'Neill from Love Story.
You mean Ryan O'Neill from Barry Lyndon?
Yes, from Barry Lyndon, which we'll never review, probably. Sorry. Andre Brower He's best known for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but also one of my favorite movies from him, Glory. Not a movie guy, but I wanted to throw this name out. Norman Lear, one of the great TV guys, redefined television in the 70s. We lost Suzanne Somers, of course, best known for Three's Company. We lost Michael Gambon, who's probably best known as Professor Dumbledore in the Harry Potter series. Bob Barker, Happy Gilmore, where he plays himself.
Price is wrong, Bob.
A director that we have done a couple of his movies, William Friedkin from The Exorcist. And one of the movies we were thinking about doing, The French Connection, he is also best well known for. So those are, you know, a few of some people who have passed away in 2023. In our next episode, we'll have a few more names. So there's more to come on that, unfortunately.
Yes, we don't obviously glorify when people pass, but we do like to try and honor
unless
them.
Unless you go on my Facebook page. If you go on my Facebook page, you're going to find everybody who dies in 2023.
Ken's Death Watch, yes. Mm-hmm. Ask for it by name.
It's part of the Deadpool.
Part of the Deadpool, right? Great movie, too, in itself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Ted, tell us where they can find us on the World Wide Web.
Well, we can be found on X/Twitter at Hooked_Movies. Come there and participate with us, and we're going to start to be a lot more active on Twitter and tweet out things and join the community and talk and interact. And then, of course, whatever podcast version you're listening to us on, whether it be Good Pods, Apple, Spotify, any of those podcast platforms, if you can, give us a rating and review. It helps us get noticed and it helps us rise up the charts from where we're at.
We're also looking at possibly joining the YouTube movement. I've heard about this thing, this YouTube thing. I've heard about it. We may
eventually
be on there.
Nobody wants to see those faces.
No,
don't worry. They're not going to see the faces. Those will be audio with pictures.
Audio only. Audio only. No video on YouTube, but it does open us up to more people.
Podcasts.
I have a face made for radio, but here we are.
I have a face made for food, so I need to eat food.
And Ken, you're doing a great job on our Facebook page. You had that interesting article on James Bond.
I enjoy these fun little things that Honest Trailers puts out. So there's an Honest Trailer about Sean Connery's James Bond. Check it out. It's very funny indeed. There's some other articles to check out. Please feel free to comment about those articles or start a discussion with us. Let's have some fun. And 2024, we're going to be doing some different stuff. We're going to probably stay away from more of the theme movies. So please let us know movies that you want us to review, because we're going to open it up much more in 2024 for you.
Yeah, we definitely want to try to be more interactive with the listening audience there and kind of see what you guys want. What are your needs? What are your thoughts? What are your opinions? We definitely want you to participate in X/Twitter and Facebook.
Hot dog.
You'll get nothing and like it. That's right.
What do you want us to say, or what do you think that we'll think about your favorite movie?
Do we want to vote Ted off the island? Let us know your thoughts. As always,
we already tried to kill
the island in 2023. So
that's right.
I almost was part of the in memoriam section here.
As always, let's all hope that 2024 is a better year. So let me be the first to wish you all a happy and safe new year, and happy movie watching to all.
Happy New Year. See you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies. Happy New Year.